Hello, and welcome to the Modern Maker Podcast for Thursday, the 28th of November, otherwise known as Thanksgiving. No need to...
That sucks!
Tell us about Thanksgiving. What's that one all about?
Yeah, so my big take on Thanksgiving is... Nah, I'm kidding. I really have no take on Thanksgiving other than it's great to spend time with friends and family.
I will say, it is one of the holidays that I feel like you enjoy more the older you get.
Like I think so.
When you were little, it was all just like you were just waiting for Christmas, basically. And now you're like, oh, I like presents. Food.
Yeah, it's like you get a good meal, but as a kid, is it really worth it?
No, it was like it was everything that Christmas was minus the best part.
Yes, Christmas preparation. Making sure everyone's on their cooking game.
Yeah, pretty much. It's just a little dry run. But anyway, we're Ben-less today because he's in China.
Shanghai. Yeah.
Doing the mini stuff.
I'm a little jealous. I told him, too bad I couldn't go also because then I would dress up like Owen Wilson and then he could dress up like Jackie Chan or vice versa. You know, we're not playing stereotypes here, but we could do like some kind of like Shanghai Noon, Shanghai Nights, like spoof. It would have been really great.
Been a lot of content for the gram.
Yeah. And it also wouldn't have even applied because that movie is not shot in Shanghai. It's like 99% in like the old West.
They just wanted the pun.
Pretty much. It would have been worthwhile, for sure.
For sure. But in any case, we asked you guys for just some questions. We like to do those kind of shows every once in a while, and you guys came through with a lot of questions, so I went ahead and screenshotted them. We're going to answer them off the cuff, and I say we just jump right into them.
But before we jump in, let's give a big thanks to this episode's sponsor.
Nobody?
No. Maker Brand.
Oh, Maker Brand. Actually, you know what? We'll talk about it in there, because I was... perusing the questions, there's actually quite a few of them.
Okay, I was going to promote our Black Friday sale.
Well, we'll have the perfect opportunity when somebody asks about it in here.
Well, hang tight, guys, for this great Maker Brand ad read coming up.
Yes. So so I went through the questions and just like quickly screenshotted the ones that, you know, were things that like we didn't answer yet or weren't too like making specific that was like, you know, getting into a nitty-gritty thing, just kind of more like general interest or general making type of things. And there were a few things that I'm surprised came up a lot. Huh. Like 5 to 10 people asked these questions over and over. So one of them was, hang on, let me pull it up.
Yeah, so these are burning questions.
Well, okay, so
people need to know.
The one that I screenshotted said, will Chris be selling the Ridgeline and pick up a Cybertruck to match you all? So I know you guys, so a lot of people asked like and wanted opinion on the Cybertruck. I know you and Ben just put out a video. I have not had a chance to watch it. So
well,
I don't know.
That's perfect.
Yeah,
we'll
go ahead
to sort of like have a one-on-one conversation about it uninfluenced.
Yeah. So why don't you start off and tell me like, what was your general take and what was Ben's take too? I know you don't want to put words in his mouth, but like, what was the general sentiment you got from him?
Yeah. I love speaking for Ben. So this is great.
He'll love it too.
So my general reaction to it initially was confusion. And I couldn't really decide whether I was fully sold on it. I just saw some pictures of it. They were similar to some of the renderings that I had seen before, so I wasn't completely taken aback by it. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't sure if it was an SUV because of the fact that the truck bed
it's
is
like
covered.
Hatchy kind of looking.
Right, and the whole kind of design of it sort of lends itself to being like a grocery getter in a way. Mm-hmm. But then once I saw the unveiling, a couple things. One, I saw how big it was.
Yeah.
Like I saw Elon Musk standing in front of it, and I was like, oh, okay. This is a truck. This isn't a minivan. This isn't a little crossover thing. This is a real truck.
Yeah. How big is the bed? Is it like a 6-foot bed?
It's a full 6-foot bed.
Okay.
Which I think is where, because in the little video that me and Ben did, we're sort of comparing it to, you know, the Chevy Avalanche and other trucks that have sort of tried to play the crossover game.
Yeah.
And all of them seem to forget people that use a truck bed typically want at least 6 feet.
Right.
And I think that's where the Honda Ridgeline really got it right.
Yeah, it's like, I think it's just shy of it. It's like 5'8 or something like that.
I didn't even notice. I genuinely thought it was 6 feet. And so the comparison that I kind of made was it definitely fits the consumer taste of the people that are interested in a truck like that. Someone that wants an Avalanche, or I'm sorry, not an Avalanche. Is it an Avalanche?
Yeah, that's the Chevy one.
Yeah,
that's
the
similar
Chevy one.
To it's Brad or a Ridgeline. I think Brad's had two of them.
Wow. Okay. So
he's
something
a big
along
Avalanche
those lines.
Man.
It totally fits that book. But the cool part about it is It's got 14,000 pounds towing capacity.
Yeah, for like the top level one, right?
Exactly. And that's more than a standard 1500, you know, Chevy, right. Dodge, Ford, whatever it is. So the people that are actually using it as a truck, if they're hauling heavy equipment or something like that, the range would be a concern if you're going cross country, if you're going a long distance. But if you're running around town, you're going to tow anything you need to. And so then it sort of checks off real life truck users because it's got a full size bed and it can tow. And then the third thing, this thing is faster than like a Lamborghini.
Yeah. Electric motors, man.
Exactly. It goes 0-60 in 2.9 seconds.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not saying that I'm going to be driving it like a maniac. No, wait,
you did. You put your deposit in to get in line or whatever, right?
I did immediately. And yeah.
Which one? Did you pick a trim level right then?
You know, I got it loaded out.
Did you really?
Well, yeah. So really the only options that they give you, and this is sort of one of the cool things about it being a stainless steel body, is like you really don't have a lot of options.
Yeah.
Even with the Model S or the Model X, you sort of get to choose white or black.
Mm-hmm.
Anything extra is like you can pay for it. But in terms of getting sort of standard pricing, you either get white or black. But with it being all the stainless steel, you don't even get that option. So really, you only choose from whether you want a single, dual, or triple motor. Mm-hmm. And that just depends on your taste or what your needs are. It gives you more juice, gives you more range, it doesn't actually give you more range, I don't think.
Well, I don't think the motor would, but I think there's different battery sizes also.
Exactly. And so I went ahead, I got it loaded out. I figured, hey, if I'm going to go all in and buy my first new vehicle ever,
then you're going to go all in.
Then I'm going all in for sure. And that was what was so cool about the fact that the truck looks the way it does, is Model X's are very cool. The gullwing doors, that's sick.
Mm-hmm.
But when the doors are closed, it still looks like an Infiniti, or it looks like a nice mid-tier luxury SUV.
Right.
Same with the Model S. It looks like a Toyota Camry on the outside. When you're sitting in it and when you're driving it, it feels amazing. But to the outside viewer,
right,
it's really not that impressive. And so I'm not somebody that would consider a Model S or a Model X because I drive a truck. I need a truck.
Right.
And so that was one of the points that I was making in the video as well, is I just genuinely, genuinely appreciate that on the truck, which is something I would consider whether it looked like a standard truck or if it looked the way it does now. I'm just so appreciative that they went all in on the design and made it really look like the truck of the future.
Right. So I have some thoughts on that. So
awesome.
I think like I've heard a lot of people like talking about like, I love it or I hate it or whatever. And like, obviously that's all totally subjective, whether somebody loves it or hates it. But the one thing that I think everybody can agree on is they went for it. Like they really tried to like do something different. And so when you think about Tesla, like obviously, like you were saying, you think of the Model X, the Model S, the, what is it, a 3? Or what's,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think I kept calling the S a 3.
Yeah. So the
Model 3 is the one that looks like a Camry.
That's the cheaper one. The S is exactly. The like first kind of like mass produced one that they did. That's the bigger luxury sedan kind of one.
Thank you for that correction.
Yeah. And so people think of that, which is like, you know, it's still obviously out there in like terms of the performance and the design to an extent, but like they're still kind of like trying to just like make a nice looking car that people will like. But if you look at like where they actually started off with the Roadster that they came out with, like, I don't know, 10 years ago or whatever, that was based off of a Lotus Elise, which is like a little tiny two-seater sports car, British sports car. And so it was like more of an extreme thing. And so like, you know, they probably did that because they knew that like coming out with that is going to make a bigger splash than coming out with a sedan. And they made that big splash. And then that allowed them to go into the other more mass produced things. That's what I think, or I, you know, I guess or whatever.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's sort of like you do something to draw in all the eyes and then give them a reasonable option.
Right. And so now going into a totally new segment, the truck, right? So they could have just been like, okay, let's just adapt a Model X into a truck. And there'd be a lot of people that would buy it, but it would probably be the Tesla people who are like already on board with that whole thing, right? I don't know how many people you're going to convert that are just like, I've been buying Chevys since I was 16 and my dad had a Chevy and blah, blah, blah. Like that's what you're up against if you're trying to do this. So you have to do something that's crazy in a way to like really make a splash and be kind of polarizing and potentially get people to get on board with that. Because like the things that Tesla appeals to people about, it's like, I don't know that truck people, that it's as appealing to them, like the environmental factors and that kind of stuff. Like, I don't know if that registers with your typical truck person. And so they had to like do something wild And they did it. Like, look how many people are talking about it. Love it or hate it, I think like they're already on the right track, obviously.
Right. And that's a total kind of point that I really never touched on, or I never really thought too much about, is the fact that a truck market is basically entering into a completely new space.
Yeah. And like a super loyal space, like even more so than like, I think most people are not that brand loyal with like cars. Like I like Hondas. I've had a lot of Hondas in my life, but like if there was a cooler Toyota. Yeah, yeah, I had a Tacoma. If there was a cooler car that was a Toyota, I'll get a Toyota. If there's a cooler car that's a Ford, I'll get a Ford. Truck people seem to be like very loyal for the most part. Yeah. I like Ford.
Big time. Sort of like diehards. Mm-hmm. They either decide one brand is more reliable than all the others, and then they just never change their mind.
Right.
Yeah. But, you know, looking at the whole electric vehicle truck space mm-hmm. as well, is there's already a couple of manufacturers that are coming out with trucks that look like standard trucks.
Yeah, so there's that like Rivian, which I think Ford bought. That's what my dad was telling me. I haven't heard that yet. I don't know if he's subscribed to Motor Trend or what, but apparently like Ford is investing a lot into the electric space, and so they decided to buy that one. Because I remember when they announced that, like, I don't know, a year ago, and like when they set all the specs on it and the price, I was like, no way. Like, how are they going to have the infrastructure to do this? But yeah, with Ford buying them, like, well, there's a lot of infrastructure.
Yeah, and I'll say the Rivian, I'm not impressed with, particularly the front end of it, the headlights that are very like oval shaped, things like that. Mm-hmm. It really doesn't do it for me. There's another truck manufacturer that's sort of playing the standard truck move as well, and they're called Atlis, A-T-L-I-S. Okay. And they've got one that, you know, I guess if a Rivian is more of a Nissan style truck, mm-hmm. the Atlis is a little bit more of like a Ram or kind of okay. like a Chevy, something a little bit beefier, kind of looks like a diesel in a way.
Okay.
But the way I look at it is those have been in sort of production for a long time, or they've been in development for a long time, I should say. Mm-hmm. And so people are sort of used to seeing it. And what you are just kind of pointing on is like bringing something that looks completely different than everything else sort of keeps it from getting lost in the mix.
Right. Yeah, they're definitely making a splash.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm really excited for it. Realistically, it's a decent priced option as well.
I mean, when they said the $39,000 option, I was like, wow. Yeah. And of course, like that's a very different truck in terms of like the power and everything compared to the top of the line one. But still,
you're getting materials from Home Depot and lumber, it's fine.
Exactly.
Perfect.
It would do. That's what I always say about the Ridgeline. Like, it does everything I would ever need it to do, and probably what 99% of people who buy trucks would need it to do.
Yeah, and you could even, with the base model single motor, you could drive a travel trailer with it, and you can go camping, and you can go do all of that with it. You're just not going to haul a tractor or something
right.
like that.
Right.
So yeah, regardless of whether it's the cheaper model or the more expensive model, a loaded out, you know, like Chevy 2500 is in the mid-60s.
Oh yeah. I know my across the street neighbor has a Ford F-350, and he was talking about like the new ones. He's like, they're over $100,000.
What?
for a 350.
Whew. Yeah. Oh yeah. Like diesel and everything.
Yeah. His
like
is
that,
like a dually
yeah.
and.
But still, that's a house.
Yeah. Well, yeah. We're in Oklahoma at least.
In Oklahoma, that's a house. Yeah. Yeah.
Almost in Joshua Tree.
Yeah. In LA, that's, you know, that's rent for the year. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. All right, so that's probably enough. Well, I guess to answer the question of will I be trading in my Ridgeline, I don't plan to right now, but it doesn't come out for like 3 years or whatever, so who knows, exactly. Maybe by then I will.
Dude, I'm telling you, if all three of us had one, we would make the most insane like YouTube videos with it, because we'd have a fleet of them.
It would just turn into a truck racing channel.
Yeah, and I know I've seen like Ben Paik posting also put a deposit down and from Wobi Design.
Yeah, and Ben Ueda also is put a deposit down.
Word.
Oh, man. He just got a Tacoma.
I know, but I don't know what to say to it. Then. I guess he's going to trade his in too.
Yeah.
But what we need to do is when they do release, if there ends up being like five or six of us like YouTube makers that end up actually getting one, we got to get a fleet. We got to get a convoy, and we got to do some crazy stuff in the desert.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like when it got announced, like, and I was seeing everybody post like their, I put a deposit down things. I was like, well, I guess this is like now the official truck of people who share their woodworking stuff on Instagram and YouTube.
Yeah. And I love it. I mean, I'm going to be able to get quite a bit of content out of it. I think just being a dude that actually uses a truck compared to the majority of people that are sort of like Tesla fans or people that are posting about Teslas
right.
that are a little bit more sort of, you know, what would you call them? Silicon Valley. That's right. a nice way of saying
there
it.
There you go.
You know, I would like the idea of posting a video once I've been using it for a bit and say like, this is my honest thoughts. You know, I don't haul stuff for like the oil fields, but I'm using a truck day to day like a truck. And these are my honest thoughts, you know?
Yeah. I don't haul stuff for the oil fields, but I do haul ass, and then go 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds.
Yeah. Then I can, like build out some kind of solar charging station. Then I got free gas forever, which is pretty awesome.
We should do a series where like we load the back up and then just hard take off.
Yeah.
Just dumping stuff out of the back.
Yes. But anyways, I'm very excited for it. It's a long road until they actually get here.
Right.
But while everyone's talking about it, I figured that was what me and Ben did. I was like, well, while everyone's talking about it, let's go ahead and make a YouTube video about it. And so we just started a auxiliary YouTube channel. It's called Mike and Ben. I made the channel, so I put my name yeah, first.
Number one.
Also, you tell me, does Mike and Ben or Ben and Mike flow better?
Mike and Ben and Mike. It kind of does, maybe just because you said it first, now you've swayed me. But yeah, I feel like it does roll off the tongue a little nicer. You don't want to start with that hard.
Yeah, it's not as nice.
Ease your way in, Mike and Ben.
Yeah, and it's funny because me and Ben all the time, well, pretty much every night, at least 5 nights a week, we're sitting on the back porch just talking for an hour about random stuff anyways.
Might as well YouTube it.
And so we say that all the time. We're like, man, we should just kind of film this.
Yeah.
You know, of the hour, we've got 20 minutes of good stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you know what I will say? You know what? Starting with that Ben did work for Ben and Jerry's.
Oh, no. So,
you never know.
Dang,
you may want to rebrand.
Too late. No, I'm kidding.
Too late.
But anyways,
we're locked in.
Yeah, like I said, it's a long time coming, but we're talking about it while the getting's good.
Yep.
All right. What do we got next, though?
Next up, let's hop in, because there was a lot of people, again, who asked about Maker Brand. So
okay.
I'll just choose one of them, and we'll use that as a stand. And so this person just said, any exciting new additions to Maker Brand Co. in the coming year? So I guess we can kind of like fill people in on roughly what's been going on and what's going to go on.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to take it away since you're more involved probably, or you're more familiar with all the ins and outs?
Yeah. So Maker Brand is sort of going through, well, we're coming out of what I would call growing pains.
Yes.
Is that safe to say?
I would say so.
Okay, great. And so what we've been doing for the past month or so while we've been out of stock is beefing up our manufacturing and our fulfillment chains. We're getting our manufacturing more reliable so that we're in stock regularly. And we're actually bringing all of our fulfillment in-house to Oklahoma. And my parents are going to be doing it, which is amazing, because why not, right?
They'll leave you.
Exactly. I can trust my parents to make sure everything goes out on time. But it was one of those things where we had a company doing our fulfillment and it was going well, but everybody wants a cut. You know what I mean? And it's the same way with the clamps and all of that sort of stuff. And so instead of continuing to pump out new products, we actually took sort of the past 6 months to sort of say, what's working for us? And how can we double down on that and make Maker Brand as good as we can?
Yeah.
And so to start, I think the finish is maybe the best place to start.
I think it was pretty clear that like the way that the people responded to it was that the finish was popular. I mean, we still all the time are getting inquiries about it. And, you know, so yeah. We've told a lot of people kind of what we're saying right now, one-on-one, at least I have, in a lot of like DMs and stuff.
I've been writing a lot of emails, man.
Yeah. Just like, you know, yeah, we're like, we have fulfillment like pretty much set up. We have a few orders to fulfill, which will like help us work out any last minute kinks. And then very soon we'll be able to just like reopen it back up so that people can actually order it again.
That's right. And so that's sort of what we've been doing. And looking at the landscape of the finish that we've been selling, around the world.
Some seas.
About 90% of what we're selling is finish with wax.
Yes.
That's sort of what we promote as the furniture finish, mainly because it's got a wax sealer on top that sort of helps protect everything.
One-stop finish.
Yeah. Obviously, it's not a film finish like we've talked about before. It's not a polyurethane. No. It's a mix of carnauba wax, beeswax, all natural ingredients, so it's really food safe. But it just gives any kind of furniture project that you build that extra layer of protection. And so that was one of the things that we saw and that we decided, instead of expanding on finish, let's actually shrink that down and double down on what is working so well. And so now, instead of selling two versions of Maker Brand Simple Finish, one with wax, one without, which also was a little bit of a confusing point for some people purchasing.
Yeah, it seemed to be causing more confusion than, it seemed like for every order we had, there was another question.
Yeah, big time. And so we're paring that down to where we now have one single product, Maker Brand Simple Finish. That's our oil-based finish, and we're running with it. And that's sort of the plan, at least I think for 2020, at least from my book.
I would say for the foreseeable future.
I would love to see us just lock that down and just sell a crap load of it. I mean, to be honest,
right?
But just have one product that we can always make sure that the quality is reliable and that we're not having to warehouse a bunch of different things and deal with all of those questions, and also give all of the people that are buying an option that's confusing. Just limit it down, make it nice.
Yes.
And so that's what we're doing now. And we have an amazing Black Friday sale. We're launching on Thursday, the day this episode comes out. And up until this point, for the past probably 4 weeks, we've been out of stock. And so right now we've got a limited inventory. We've got more being made. Okay. So we'll be doing a Black Friday sale where Simple Finish is 10% off. We've got free shipping. And then all of our clamp packs, both the starter pack and the professional pack, are going to be 15% off, because we want to get product moving. We want to be able to make a big ripple. Now, to be upfront, we are probably going to run out of stock of Simple Finish. Maybe not Thursday, but probably before Cyber Monday is over.
Temporarily out of stock.
But the good news is we'll have more in stock in the following probably week.
Yes.
So this is almost like a soft relaunch.
Yeah, I was going to say that's kind of, it's almost like a relaunch.
And it's not the worst thing. Like I said, we had a few back orders that we've been taking care of over the past week, making sure our fulfillment is under control and we're not doing anything that we shouldn't do, whether that's having spillage in transit, making sure that the postal service gives us a thumbs up on our packaging, all of that sort of stuff. And then now that that has gone well, I've actually gotten a few messages from the people I've been in contact to saying that their back ordered items are to them and they arrive safely. We're basically going to level up and this time have a lot more orders, but not an unmanageable amount of orders to where if there is a kink in the chain, we can get it fixed
right
without any sort of like cataclysmic problems.
Right. Without causing a bunch of anxiety in us.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God, I got people that are mad at me because the oil's not there.
Hey man, people have been mad at me because we've been out of stock for a while. I got people messaging me. They're like, you said it would be ready in 3 weeks.
What's up, bro?
It's been 3 weeks. I'm like, I know, just give us one more week. We'll be there for Black Friday. I promise.
I meant 3 weeks from now.
Yeah. And I got to say, Chris, you killed it on the label design.
Thank you.
They look really good.
Yeah, the label design for the first one like looked cool digitally, but then it didn't really translate to physical that well. And we did a lot of stupid things like being like, oh, this looks cool. Print up 1,500 of them.
Yeah.
Print up one of them.
Yeah. And so that was a lesson learned. I got a proof before we ordered another 1,000 this time.
Yeah.
But I think it reads really, really well. And
yeah, definitely it's a lot awesome. More readable.
It's awesome because our main sort of marketing move is between YouTube and Instagram and all. It's the internet.
Yeah.
And so having something that sort of reads
shows
well
up
on camera is really exciting. So I couldn't be more excited to get this out. I know it's been long awaited by a lot of people. I actually posted on Instagram today, which is Monday, and the comments blew up from people that are just excited to finally get a can, or the people that are running dangerously low and sort of like saving it for a special project. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, I don't have to hoard this anymore. I can use it as I wish.
You're back in business and reliable.
Exactly.
All right. The next question, which I don't know why we got, like, seriously, again, like 5 people asked about this, about what our favorite headphones to use in the shop are. So I know you recently, you've talked about it. You were a AirPods man. Are you still an AirPods man, or have you gotten the AirPod Pros?
I haven't gotten the AirPod Pros.
I bought them for Dolores. And
okay, so yeah. So is there anything different from them other than the fact that they've got the cushy, the tip, kind of like a traditional earbud?
Yeah, so that, I guess you'd call that like passive noise canceling, or it's just like a physical element of noise canceling because it seals your eardrum off more than the other kind of AirPod would. So it has that. It also has active noise canceling where it's like, you know, putting out. Yeah. So it's pretty good. Like, I haven't used hers in a noisy environment. I just kind of like threw them on at the house to see what they were like, and they sounded good. They felt comfortable. They also are a little like stubbier, so the thing doesn't hang out from your ear as much.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
I don't know if they added any other kind of like control to them. Maybe they did or maybe they didn't. I know they're already like pretty good about all that kind of stuff, and like even, you know, the original ones were good about that stuff. They had good range and all that stuff. So like she wears it like all the time. Like we'll be going somewhere and I'll be like, you know, you have like one of them in still. And she'll be like, oh yeah. Like she's just like, so she basically just lives with one of them in her ear now.
Wow.
So I don't know how they would be in the shop. I mean, I would assume that if you're using them right now, like it would just be a better version of what you have right now.
Yeah.
I always, and so it's funny, I get a lot of questions where people think that I'm wearing like Windows Surface headphones, I guess they're called, but I have their, I can never say this right. Sony WH-1000X3, or it's some combination of all those letters and numbers, and it's got a three on it. So it's like okay. The third iteration of this. I think the reason people think they're the Microsoft ones is because they have like a silver color that I got. And so the Microsoft ones look that way, but they're great. Like they're so good that I actually bought a second pair for going to the gym, and I bought like a refurbished pair of the iteration before. But yeah, they like do an amazing job of, no, let me say that I don't know how actually safe they are, because I mean, they do definitely block noise. Like even if I just put them on and they were off, they cup the ear. So it's not as much as wearing like normal, you know, 3M hear protection or whatever, hearing protection, but it does still block a considerable amount of noise. And then like factoring that in plus the noise cancel, the active noise canceling, which is really good. And then like once you're playing a podcast or music, like I do some pretty loud stuff and like I can still listen to a podcast and like not have to crank the volume full blast or anything like that and like hear what I'm actually listening to.
That's really cool. But they're over ears.
They're over ear. And that's the other thing is they're expensive. Like, I don't know what they are now, but when I bought them, they're like $300.
Yeah. For I'm me, looking at them online right now and they say about $250.
Right. So like if you're only working in the shop 4 hours a week or something like that, like, I don't know that you want to spend $300 on a pair of headphones unless you're going to use them elsewhere in life, then like it could be worth it. For me personally, I was okay with that. And that's the other thing is I could easily break them in the shop. And so I kind of like made peace with the fact that, okay, if I break these once a year and I have to spend $300 a year on headphones, I work, you know, 40 hours a week in the shop. That's worth it to be able to like listen to something that sounds good and works well for me.
I like it. So to go back to the whole AirPod Pro thing, because I didn't know they had active noise canceling. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I checked it out and they've got basically negative 20 dB. Of noise canceling, but I don't know if that's between active and, you know,
right, the physical,
whatever you would call it, the physical. Yeah. But I know IsoTunes Pro have 32 dB noise canceling.
Okay. And those ones don't have any active though. Those are all just because it's sealing your ear up, right?
I think so. And a quick rule of thumb. So
harken back to your audio engineering days.
Yeah. So a negative 10 dB difference is half the volume.
Okay. So it's like an exponential scale?
Exactly. And so the difference between negative 20 and negative 30 dB means that it's canceling half as much noise as an IsoTunes set.
Okay.
So it's probably not safety rated for sure, but I'm wearing my normal AirPods in the shop all the time. And the only tools that I really don't like to wear it with and that I'll put on earmuffs with is the planer and occasionally the table saw. Everything else, I feel pretty comfortable wearing them. And yeah, so maybe the AirPods Pros might be borderline suitable for a workshop.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll borrow hers one day and try them out just to like see what it's like. But I mean, actually, you make a good point. So like what you said about like there's like a few tools that you don't feel comfortable using them on or whatever. There's a lot of times where like, even if I'm using a tool like that, like I'll just take them off just because I'm like, I can't really pay attention to the podcast I'm listening to right now anyway.
Yeah.
So I'll kind of just like pause it or whatever. But like for sanding and stuff like that. And actually recently people saw that I got the Mirka sander and dust extractor and it's a little bit quieter than my Festool stuff was. And it's also got a really long hose on it. So I can actually put the dust extractor like a good, you know, 15 feet away from me while I'm sanding. And like, I feel like it's generating a lot less noise than it was used to before. And just so for proximity. Stuff like that, yeah, just because of the proximity and because I think it actually is a little bit quieter. Like it's never been better. Never awesome. Been better to listen to music and sand.
You just get that Mirka sander because it's got such a big pad.
It's got the same size as what I had before, which I think it's a 6-inch, which is okay. What my Festool was also. It's a really small form factor. It's really aggressive. They also make this sandpaper called like Arbornet or Arbornet, which is basically like a mesh instead of like a typical paper with holes in it, which lasts such a long time. Like it's insane. Yeah. Like you will be using it for like days and be like, this piece is still good. What the hell's going on? The only thing you have to be really careful if you hit any kind of corners, like it'll just tear up. But for like a large, you know, a tabletop or sides of a case or whatever, like it'll last a really long time. The other thing, like, so when I first got it, I didn't like the fact that it's got a button that you have to continuously depress on top of it. But I've actually come to like it because it almost like forces you into good habits. Like it forces you into holding it in a way where you kind of can't tip it. And especially because it's so small, like it's actually very ergonomically friendly. And yeah, it's great. Like it's such a good sander. The Festool ones are great. And then like, so when you go from that, we're like, oh, like what could be better than this? And then you try this and you're like, oh my God, this is actually a noticeable improvement.
That's awesome. Cool. Yeah. All right. I'm gonna try it out next time I'm out. Cause
Mirka,
I was very impressed by your Festool, the Rotex.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really know how you step up from there.
That thing's like the Rivian and this is the Tesla. This is the Cybertruck of Sanders.
Perfect.
All right, let's go through some more questions. So now we'll get into some more of the more one-off type questions. Let's see what we got here. Okay, so somebody asks, what's the most important thing for shooting a video for a newbie?
A camera.
He put camera, lighting, shop, etc. So I would say obviously camera would be the most important thing. I guess the thing that I would say is like, in general, don't worry about like having to have everything to get started. I think people make that mistake. Where like you think like, oh, I don't have lighting. I don't have this. Where like in reality, when you're doing what we do, having more stuff sometimes just like complicates you and slows you down. Like I have like a fancy slider that like when I first got, I would use in the shop during shots. And then I was like, you know, this is kind of cumbersome and it's not really adding anything to my video. And so like, I don't even use it anymore. I use it for like beauty shots at the end of videos sometimes.
Right.
But I don't really like bust it out in the shop that much. So it's almost like a simpler setup is kind of better in a lot of ways. And really the things that are more important and are going to like make or break your video more than having lighting or having the best thing is just like taste.
So yeah,
good composition, you know, using the lighting that is available to you the best that you can, that kind of stuff.
I agree. And if you don't really have a ton of experience with shooting video going in, the leaner of a setup you have, you can sort of manageably digest each component and then add something new as you go. But it's nice to sort of know the limits of your camera, lighting wise, and all of that sort of stuff before you're adding all of these extra components, because then you know, oh, I've got plenty of natural light in my shop. I really don't need a ton of extra lights, or vice versa.
Or this is the one spot where I could use lighting or whatever. And then you're like buying a specific need.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy that decides he wants to start mountain biking, buys like $5,000 of gear, and then realizes, oh, this isn't that fun.
I hate mountain biking.
Yeah, or something like that. You want to be the guy that just like, I don't know, has a reasonably priced mountain bike, goes down a hill and realizes it's a lot of fun, and then gets a good one when he gets good at it.
Yeah, you want to be riding past that guy in sweats and a t-shirt.
Yeah, you don't want to be
that guy.
You don't want to be the gear guy, the guy that just buys everything but doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, I agree with you. I think the most valuable thing when it comes to making videos is just getting started.
Yes.
Just know, unless you're Chris, your first few are going to suck. My first 30 videos in terms of, what would you call it, like production level, they all sucked.
Yeah.
But there was a mediocre to decent project behind it and they still got views.
Right.
And so at the end of the day, YouTube really is like a matriarchy where, not a matriarchy.
Meritocracy.
A matriarchy is where there's like a queen.
It's like the female is head of the
state
pecking order.
Yeah, exactly. It's a matriarchy where
meritocracy.
Golly. It's that, whatever Chris said, to where at the end of the day, if you have a video that's just on par, it could even be a little bit subpar. If the project behind it is really good and you're able to create a good thumbnail and a good title that sort of encapsulate what it is to get people in the door, if you can do that and then follow it up with a decent piece of content, people are going to find it and people are going to appreciate it.
Yeah, I remember we talked about this at WorkbenchCon last year when we were answering some questions during our session. So I don't think we ever said it here, but the way, like, once you have like a catalog of stuff out there, if your first videos suck, the only people who are going to see them are people who are like digging through your whole back catalog. Because way it works is like when if somebody stumbles upon Mike now, they're kind of getting like a greatest hits of modern builds. You know, they're going to see like whatever new video you just put out that they happen to stumble upon. And then it's going to be like your bed that has 4 million views. And then your doghouse that has 3 or 4 million views. Like it kind of like serves like, here are their like good videos that you'll like. So you don't need to worry about like everything being a banger, because like, as you just flesh it out, people are only going to be exposed to your good stuff anyway.
Right. And all of those videos that aren't certified bangers, the people that enter through that gate and enjoy that content, they're only going to be pleasant. Yeah, they're only going to be pleasantly surprised by the better content that you have.
That's right.
I've still got plenty of old videos that still do quite a bit of views. And even though I'm not particularly proud of the videos, I still really appreciate them because they bring new eyes. And hopefully those same people watch my new videos and are like, oh, hey, this kid's improved, you know, whatever it is.
This kid's he really got better. Making strides.
Yeah. So
he's just a real matriarch.
Just he's God dang it. I can't believe I said that twice. Yeah. But just get started. That's it.
All right. So next question says, how many projects do you work on at once? And then there's a second part, but it says, and the best part of Thanksgiving is the pies. Fact. We can discuss that later. But as far as how many projects you work on at once, I tend to, for the most part, be just like a one project at a time kind of person.
I am too. I find that if I'm doing multiples, I just let other things stack up.
Yeah.
I sort of like editing my content as I go.
Mm-hmm.
So if I've got a 4-day project, maybe two of those nights, I sort of sit down, I put a lot of my clips in place, I sort of see how the video is coming together.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm sort of stacking projects and all of this sort of stuff, I either let all of the edit build up to where it's just one long 16-hour edit session that just I really hate, or I sort of let the projects themselves sort of build up to where I've got a bunch of half-finished projects, but it doesn't seem like I make any progress for a couple of days.
Yeah. Yeah, I tend to be like, so I try to, if at all possible, like know at least what I'm going to build for a couple projects into the future. Like, okay, I'm going to do a coffee table and a bed and blah, blah. Those are like my things for this month or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Then like once I'm building one, I'll usually wait until I'm like done with that one. And then I'll be editing that one, like, you know, writing voiceover and all that stuff and kind of like finalizing the design for whatever I have to do after that. So that like, because I tend to get very much like, I like editing. Starting is always kind of like a pain in the butt, but like once I get into it, I like it and I like the rhythm of it. But like by the time I'm done with it and putting like the final touches and then getting ready to launch a video and all that stuff, like I'm really ready to be like, let's build this next thing. So that's when I'm like putting all the final touches on whatever it's going to be. And, you know, hopefully I have it at least like 80% done by the time I even need to do that. But yeah, I don't know, like it would probably be more efficient to do it another way, but I think if I just got to that point where I was like, shoot, now I have to edit 4 videos, I would just be like, oh, I don't want to do this.
Yeah, back to back.
Yeah.
Right. So whenever me and Ben were in New York doing the podcast studio for Andrew Schultz, which we'll be heading back out there soon to finish up, I've got 2 videos that I shot there. I had a video that I just finished shooting before we left, and then I came back and I had to get a project done real quick for a sponsor.
Mm-hmm.
And so I basically had, I guess, 4 videos, like what you mentioned, in the till, all ready to be edited. But it was just like, it seemed like such a huge thing that I got the video edited that I need to. And then I did the one before I left. But the 2 videos that I shot while we were in New York, I've got like 80% edited. And I sort of like will work on them like 2 hours at a time whenever I've got sort of some downtime. But I agree with you wholeheartedly is I don't want to go from one edit, because like I said, an edit usually takes me about 16 hours somewhere along there.
Yeah,
I don't want to do that and then just do it all again.
No, you're basically just a professional editor at that point.
I know. I want to spend some time building, man. That's what I've been doing for the past couple of days. So I'm excited to like get building again before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so then the other part was this guy says that, this is not even a question. He's just saying it's fact that the best part of Thanksgiving is the pies. I'm going to say the sides. I would say if I had to pick one thing, it's the sides.
What side though? Because my favorite is a side too. And it's going to be crazy if we agree.
Sweet potato?
mashed potato.
Oh, but it's still in the potato family.
It's in the potato. Cousins. We're talking spuds here.
Yeah, we are. That'd be a good podcast. Talking spuds.
Yeah, probably would be. Like a couple of Idaho boys just talking about their harvests.
Yeah, I tell you what, boy. Got some russets coming up.
My yellows are doing real good this year.
All right, well, that's next week.
Yeah, but I agree also, though. Pies are great. I'm not a huge kind of cobbler guy. I don't do all the fruit pies, but I love pecan pie.
Love a good pecan. That I've only had it once. It's very sweet.
Yeah, it is. But aren't all pies?
Yeah, but this one's like extra sweet. It's like
maybe you had a particularly sweet one.
I think it was made by dentists just to give you cavities.
They're trying to get you in the door?
Just trying to drum up some early December business.
Big dentistry is keeping pies sugary.
Big tooth. Okay. Yeah,
big tooth.
All right, so let's see what else we got. What was the moment that you knew that you could do it full time? Assuming that he means doing YouTube. Okay.
Because I remember me and Ben just harking at you constantly, like, Chris, you just got to go full time. But I know you had a lot of other considerations, so I want to hear it from your perspective.
Okay, so we had had our second child in March of 2018, and my wife quit working at that time. So I was kind of like, all right, well, it's going to be a while until I can do this then, because I'm going to have to keep my 9-to-5 job. And I basically had two full-time jobs at that point, right? So then I had just kind of assumed that, like, me and my wife would talk about it. We'd be like, you know, hypothetically, oh, when do you think I would be able to quit? Maybe like 3 more years or something like that, right? And it got to the point where, like, I was turning down a lot of opportunities just because, like, I wouldn't have the time to do them.
What was your video pace?
My video pace at that time. So before that, it was probably like one every maybe 3 weeks. So I'd say like maybe a video and a half a month. But then after we had our kid, like I actually used to get a lot of paternity time at work. So I was actually able to kind of like ramp up production right then. And I was also like kind of stressing since Dolores had quit working then. I was like, oh man, I really like got to take on some extra stuff and earn some money here. So, yeah. So I took on some extra stuff because I had the paternity time. And so again, like I was saying, we would talk about it hypothetically. And then I was in a meeting with my boss and we were kind of talking about not even actually my boss. So I worked out on a college campus in marketing. And so I was having a meeting with the dean of the school that I was a part of. And we were just kind of talking about like plans for the next year. And like, she knew that I did the whole thing. And like, she was very encouraging of, you know, me building furniture and YouTubing and all that stuff. And so we were kind of talking about it. And I said out loud to her at that point that, like, you know, like, I really think that my future is YouTube or content creation or whatever you want to call this thing. And that if
she's like, great. All of our freshmen say that too.
Yeah. I know, seriously. Sorry. That's why people aren't coming to college. No.
Yeah.
But because I was saying, like, you know, I've been in this position now for like 3 years. If it weren't, I'd probably be like starting to look for another job right now. But oh, I wasn't, because like I've like felt kind of comfortable there. And like I kind of knew that like this was what my future was. And so we had that talk and I was saying, in that thing I said, like, but you know, I'm not going to be leaving anytime soon. I think it's still like a few years off or whatever. But I think like just like saying it out loud to her like made me like really start to think about it. And then like I the next 2 days or whatever was talking to Dolores about it. And I was like, I think we could do this right now. And like,
wow.
Literally just like made up my mind that like, then like 2 days later, like gave my 3 week notice.
All in. Holy cow. That's so awesome.
Like, so I was like very conservative about it. But then like once I like really started talking about it and like saw that like, oh, it's real. I just like full on went for it. And it was one of those things that it's like, you know, I don't know that that means that like I knew that I could do it or that I still know that I could do it. But at least I knew that like we were in a position where I could take a stab at it.
Right. So what was that feeling like after you made the decision? Like you and Dolores had a conversation where you said, I'm doing it. Like what did you feel like?
Like obviously excited and scared, but it was one of those things where it was like, I always think this, like we'll have conversations sometimes. Like when you think about like, cause now like it's especially this time of year, like I find that this is like the most kind of nerve wracking part of the year because it's like all of my agreements for the year are done. But brands are really like still thinking about the holidays. And so it seems like this is the part of the year where like you're most likely to kind of like run out of guaranteed things in the future.
Right.
Like all that stuff, because brands are just not thinking about next year yet for the most part.
Exactly.
And so whenever you think about like, oh, can I do this or whatever, in your head, you have this vision that like, if things go bad or whatever, that it's just like, it all disappears. When in reality, it'd be like, okay, you might like back up a little bit on this revenue in source or stream or whatever, but it doesn't just go from whatever to zero. Right. Yeah. There's other things that you can introduce. And I mean, that's what a lot of like this year, I think, is the things that I'm focusing on. So like the things that me and Sean are going to be focusing on, like I've talked about, are like the plan sales, and we want to do workshops within the space where we're at. So it's a lot of things that like are going to be another, hopefully if they go well, another source of revenue and like make me less reliant on that model that I'm relying on right now, which is, you know, 75% of the money comes from sponsorships.
Right. And it's very transactional in terms of like, I make a video, I get paid. Right. You know, that is, I really haven't, I don't think I've like given you proper kudos in terms of, I know it's as big of a business move as it is just like a personal move in terms of working with Sean as much as you are, mm-hmm. and having him be more and more a part of what you're doing.
Yeah.
Because it's the same move as deciding overnight that you're going to quit your job. It's a very bold move, and it's a lot of responsibility sort of to take on as well.
Right.
And it's something that I've considered, but I haven't had that person.
Right.
And so it's not something that I've considered hard.
Right.
But the fact that you've done it, it's a really cool move. Like, it's awesome.
It felt like the type of thing that'll like help propel this thing into the next like phase and the next several years. Cause just for as good as things are going right now, like, and I would be totally grateful and happy with if things were exactly like they were this year, next year, that'd be great. I would be totally satisfied with that. But realistically, when I think of like, can I keep doing this exact thing for 5 more years? I don't know. Like, it's just like, that's so like, knowing that like next year you have to come up with like 50 new things.
Dude, you're so funny. You're not going to run out of ideas. You've got good ideas.
I know, but it just feels like you're just like on a treadmill and like doing the same thing. And like, and it's great. Like, when I take a step back and think about it, it's like, oh no, like I'm so freaking lucky to be in this position and like so thankful to be born in a time and a place when this is even possible. And that like, there are people who care enough to be interested in it. Like, I don't take that stuff for granted.
No.
But then at the same time, it's just like, I do want to like expand it. And I think that this
you
will
wanna
actually-
do it justice. Yeah, you want to make sure and do it justice too. Like, if you're given an opportunity, like make sure and see it through.
See it through and like keep improving upon it too. Like, like I'm really happy with the way that that last video came out with me and Sean, like where there was like a little bit more personality in it and that kind of stuff. And I think that it's better in a lot of ways than the things that I've done in the past. And I think that this will help me, like, even if I'm not quite as prolific moving forward, it'll help me to make like better things that I'm more passionate about. And I think that translates into like the way that people view it. They can tell that when you're passionate about something or if you're just phoning it in, and it lets me do those other things that I want to do, like the plans and the workshops, and it just makes it all realistic.
Yeah, I dig it a lot. And it's, I look at other people in the space that aren't necessarily doing what we're doing, but in a similar space, someone like Adam Savage with his channel Tested.
Right.
It's Adam Savage's Tested, you know, it's his thing, mm-hmm. but there's personalities and there's shows and there's different concepts within that. It's dependent on him, but it's not completely dependent on him day to day.
Right.
To where it's not like every piece of content is 100% him 100% of the time.
Right.
And as long as what you're producing fits Four Eyes, awesome. The channel was never named Chris Salamone.
It actually technically is Chris Salamone 1.
Oh, okay.
But it goes by colloquially four eyes.
Yeah. So I think that's a great answer to that question. I don't even remember what the question was, but we
the
took
moment that you knew that you could do it full time.
Oh, what, cool.
Do you have a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've told this story before.
Yeah, you like gave yourself a year.
I gave myself a year. And right as I was coming up on a year, I think I had like 10,000 subscribers. It wasn't very many.
Were you making really any money at that point? Or I mean, like, I guess for you, because you didn't have like a career before that, it was kind of like, well, I'm making as much as I can make in a part-time job or whatever.
Yeah, I wasn't really replacing a ton of money. And so I remember I had, my first sponsor was Industrial by Design.
Right.
They make hairpin legs and whatnot. It was for like $100. I had no idea what people should be charging for sponsors. And they just reached out. I was like, oh, awesome. Yeah, I want to do some hairpin leg projects anyways. I had done like one or two videos with them. Like it went from $100 to like 500. And I was just like, oh, dang. And then right around that same time, Rockler like got interested in working with me as well. Mm-hmm. And so I definitely wasn't making money to call it full time. But at that 1 year mark, I sort of saw the trajectory and I saw this is possible. And so I just decided, hey, I've been all in for a little while. Let's stay all in.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. You've probably gone through like the hardest, or not the hardest, but like the driest part of it, which is going to be the beginning. So it would be foolish to be like, oh, I need to make an extra $200 that I can make with a part-time job compared to this, when it's like, there's so much upside to doing this and sticking with it.
Dude, that was, back then it was so crazy. I was scheming so hard to try and get an audience.
Yeah.
It was insane. Like I'm like what you were just saying, being grateful and everything like that. I'm just so grateful that now like I post a video and people watch it.
I know.
Like, that's so awesome.
Yeah. It's one of those things where like it becomes normal, but you have to like step back and just remind yourself. And like, I guess now's the time of year to be thankful. But,
yeah.
But I think about it often that just like even if a video like doesn't do well day one, right? And it gets like 20,000 views or something in the first 24 hours. It's still like, that's a lot of people.
That's a lot of people.
If you would have told me that 3 years ago, I'd be like, holy crap, that's like my dream.
Yeah, exactly. So
put it in context.
Smell the roses.
That's right.
All right, let's do one more question. We're already coming up on an hour.
I know,
there's been a fun episode. I've been digging this.
Okay, here, there's one quick one. I get asked this one a lot. It's just for me.
Yeah, let's do a couple. I'm fine with that.
Why did you switch to a Detroit Tigers hat? Go Cubs. So
story behind that. Yeah.
So I'm not into baseball. I really only like basketball. And so the reason that I got a Cubs hat initially is because since I was working full time, like I would literally film one project over the course of like, I don't know, 12 different like weekend and evening days. And I wanted to have a consistent look. So it was like a lot of like after work or whatever. So like I would dress like almost always just like black t-shirt, jeans, Cubs hat. And I got the Cubs hat just because I wanted like a nice classic looking hat, and I wanted one with a C on it since my name is Chris. And I was just like, oh, that makes sense. I'll get that hat. So
that's
funny. Kept getting dirtier and dirtier. In the meantime, my wife, whose name is Dolores, I bought her a Detroit Tigers hat for the D, and then she never wore it. And my hat was like so freaking filthy. And eventually I was like, I'm going to wear this hat. So
you
I just took it and started
tees,
wearing it.
Just like they're monogrammed the towels.
I know. I think next I'm going to get a Pirates hat just because I like the way that hat looks with like the simple yellow P and a
but
black hat.
But what does
the
P stand for?
I'm going to change my name to Peter.
Peter.
That's the best
you can come up with.
All right, Pablo.
Whoa, there you go. Now that's
Pablo
a move.
Salamone.
That's a move.
That's the story behind it.
No, I mean, I knew the story. I didn't know the story about the Detroit hat. Oddly enough, it went right over my head. Somehow I didn't even notice that you changed from Cubs to Detroit.
It's just still a hat.
Crazy.
All right, here we have another. Somebody asked, favorite NBA team and favorite NBA player of all time. Well, we got for you, it's got to be OKC, right?
Yeah. So that's my
favorite
team.
Can I guess your favorite player, though? Is it one of the big three that they had? I'm going to say this. Okay,
we're going current players or all time? Let's do both.
Okay.
All right, you go first. Current.
I mean, okay, so I'm a Laker fan. That's my favorite team. I live in the LA area. So it's hard not to have LeBron as my current favorite player.
Yeah, for sure.
And then like, so, and you know, being a kid who was born in the 80s, grew up in the 90s, liking basketball, it's hard to not have Jordan be my favorite all-time player.
Yeah.
But I want to choose like more, just to do like an obscure pick. So I can remember being mid-90s, being into basketball, watching the NCAA tournament. And I saw this one player on Wake Forest. This was like before it was a thing to like break somebody's ankles, but he broke the guy's ankles at the 3-point line. The guy tripped. He stopped and paused, like told the guy, like gestured at him, like, get up, come at me. The guy got up, shot a three in his face and busted it. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's the greatest player ever. His name was Randolph Childress. He did play in the NBA, like, you know, probably had a decent career, but was not like a superstar or an all-star by any stretch of the imagination. But I remember like really liking him, even though, like, you know, he would not be anybody's favorite player, really. And it's funny, you know who he was on a team with, that same Wake Forest team?
Who?
Tim Duncan.
Timmy D,
yeah. They were like the 1-2 punch for them. Who I was, this Childress guy's got a bright future. I don't know about this Duncan.
That's so funny.
A little off.
Close, no cigar.
So who's it for you?
All right, so my favorite right now, dude, Okay, so James Harden, I said no to the OKC OG three, but the more I'm thinking about it, I think it's James Harden. Bro, he's changing the game every single season. It's insane the impact that he has on the league.
So who would have been your favorite three during like peak OKC years when they had the you know, just before they traded him, basically? Yeah,
it would have been
Durant.
It would have been Kevin Durant.
Yeah, it's got to be, right?
Yeah, but he's whack, bro. Just as a person, it's hard to get behind Kevin Durant. He's just not cool.
He's gonna come at you with a burner account.
He's amazing. He's an incredible basketball player. If you could get, you know, he's got chicken legs, but he's insane. I'm not taking anything away from Kevin Durant. He's just a little bit of a cornball. You know what? No, I would have taken Serge Ibaka. No, I'm kidding.
You know, it's funny. He like
he just
he
got
was.
A ring.
Yeah,
he just got a ring.
Getting rings with Toronto.
Yeah, so I would say probably current player, I do think James Harden. He's not my favorite personality or anything like that in the league. And even the way he plays isn't my favorite, but
yeah.
If I got to say the dude I respect most is probably James Harden.
It's so crazy that they broke the team up.
It's
like that trade's got to be like the biggest like
terrible
like pivoting point of like what has come to be since 2012 versus what could have been.
And what's so insane is they went to finals, and if there were no injuries, they likely could have beat LeBron, but they were all like 21 years old.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being 20, like a whole team, like your whole lineup is like 21.
Oh, they could have kept that team together. And then especially like, I mean, I don't know if they knew it at the time, but like the way that the cap increased because of like the different like media deals and stuff that they were putting together. Like they could have kept that team together and like put on like a 6 or 7 year run.
Yeah, because they were pre-super team by like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's insane. The player that I'm most excited about this season is Luka Doncic, though.
Oh, yeah.
He's, dude, he's like Steve Nash and James Harden and Dirk Nowitzki combined.
Yeah.
Just he's insane. Fun. He's really
fun. He is insanely good, like for how good he is this early.
He's really fun to watch, too, because he's got a good handle, but the whole time it looks like he's about to lose it.
He's just like always on the verge.
Yeah, it looks like he's just on the edge the entire time, but somehow he still gets to the bucket.
Yeah.
And dude, he passes like Steve Nash. It's insane. Favorite all time though, I'm going to say it's either Allen Iverson or Vince Carter.
Okay.
And you know what? Now that I'm saying it, dude, yeah, it's Allen Iverson.
The truth. No, the answer.
The answer. Yep.
I think Paul Pierce might've been the truth.
Yeah, I think so. But right. As I was a kid, because Oklahoma City's new, it's a new franchise. I was always a Lakers fan as well.
Okay.
Because I grew up during, you know, Shaq, Kobe and Derek Fisher, you know?
Yeah. So, how old would you have been when OKC came? What year was it? Like 2009 or something?
I was probably like 14, something like that.
Okay. So old enough that you knew basketball well before.
Yeah. It's probably been 10 years that they've been in the city.
Okay.
Awesome. Great question.
Yeah. Man, we really filled up an hour quick.
Yeah, let's do one more quick one. Let's give it a, we got like a 2 minute warning on this question.
All right, here we go. It came in from Anatribe and they asked, if you guys had the opportunity to give a TED talk, what subject would you choose?
I'm not qualified for a TED talk and it's not really my thing at all.
Yeah.
It's a little bit, I mean, I know Ben has done a TEDx, so I'm not going to knock him or anything like that, but it's, what's the right word for it?
Well, I would say that
it's a bit
more
much.
Academic. So like, I feel like I would need to like be an expert in something more where like I actually like researched more scientifically something.
Yeah.
But something that to kind of go with like the theme of what we've already talked about is something that I've always been against that I feel like a lot of people subscribe to is that you can't pursue a passion project because you have like a full-time job.
Ooh.
Like, you know, you'll hear people say like, what would be like a common way that people would say it? Maybe like, oh, I don't even know how it is, but like, I feel like there's this thing that like, oh, you have to follow your dream. And that means like not doing this thing that's like more boring and responsible. When in reality, like you can do that thing and pursue your dream. It's going to be hard. You're going to be working, you know, 60 hours a week off the bat to do it. And like, it's going to ramp up from there, but it can definitely be done. And so I've always like, I don't know, like how that could become a TED talk. I'm sure there's like, you know, case studies that you could look at that of people who've done it or whatever. But I feel like it's something that like that stops a lot of people from, it can either do one of two things. It could stop somebody from pursuing whatever their dream is or whatever their passion is because they have to do the responsible thing. Or it could put somebody in a hole by having them follow that dream and it doesn't work out. And now they've delayed time that they could have spent establishing something that was like a little bit more realistic for them.
Right.
Just thinking that like you can only do one or the other.
So what would you title it?
Follow your dream, but not completely.
Yeah. Like, don't cut your safety net yet.
Yeah. Don't quit your day job.
Oh, don't quit your day job. That's a freaking great, dude. You got to give that one.
Right,
you
got to
give that
now.
TED talk. There is one TED talk that I liked a lot. It's from a guy named Cole Bennett. He's probably my age, give or take a year. And he started a, I guess what you would call like a music video production company called Lyrical Lemonade. Mm-hmm. And the long story short of it is he was just a kid that was like, oh, I want to shoot music videos and sort of like thought he had a knack for it. And he has a really, really unique editing style that sort of propagated through rap pretty much through and through.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of just built an empire by just by saying like, yo, you're a SoundCloud rapper or you're popping on the internet. Let me shoot a video for you. We'll put it on my channel, but you need a music video, so it's worth it.
Right.
And there's a few things. Like, he's got really good taste in the way that he shoots and edits music videos, for one, but he's also got good taste in finding the right artists to work with before they really pop off.
Mm-hmm.
And he's sort of been the guy that's broke a lot of the people that are trending in rap right now.
That's awesome.
And so he's sort of taken that from a really underground kind of small thing into, I mean, I would argue he's one of the most influential people in rap right now, which is a really weird thing to say about like a white kid from the suburbs. But he's really inspirational. He gave a TEDx, I think, and he's definitely not a speaker. But in the same way I would say I wouldn't do a TEDx, there's a part of me that says that I would because there's an audience for it if I'm in a position to give it. I'm not in a position to give a TED talk right now,
right.
But maybe in 5 or 10 years I am. And the same way someone could say, Cole Bennett, you're not a public speaker. Stop trying hard. I'm sure that what he said on that stage was probably really inspirational to a lot of young people.
Right.
And so if I'm ever in that position, I would hope that I'm not jaded and I would say yes to it.
Yep. All right. Well, look forward to that in 2024.
That's
you
right.
You can drive your Cybertruck to it.
Oh, wow. I'm going to burn. I'll do donuts on stage.
Just doing donuts and spouting knowledge.
Yeah. So what's your current obsession this week? You got one?
Ooh.
If not, I can buy you some time.
Buy me some time.
All right. This is one that we're going to be able to riff on because we've already talked about it a little bit. It's a music choice.
Mm.
It's from the band Built to Spill.
Oh, yeah.
And then what's the name of that album?
Keep It Like a Secret.
Keep It Like a Secret. All right. So a little backstory. I've been listening a little bit more and more to the stuff that I was hearing whenever I was between the ages of like 6 and 12. Because I would say around that time was when I started becoming interested in music, was probably like 12, 13. I think that's when a lot of kids start.
Yeah, kind of like junior high age.
They start like finding music for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's always like things that I would hear that I liked, but I never knew really what it was or who it was outside of like, oh, I knew I kind of liked, you know, Foo Fighters' first album, and I liked, you know, I liked some of that sort of stuff. But what I didn't realize is there's so much stuff in like the 90s and into the 2000s that,
oh yeah,
I just really never was exposed to. So I'm building out a nice playlist on all this sort of stuff, and Spotify is doing a good job of recommending me new things. But there's so many good bands. I'm talking like Local H, Lit, Everclear. Who else? I like the Wallflowers a lot. I like Beck. Weezer's not bad. Smashing Pumpkins is amazing.
It's funny because like those
early
are all,
albums,
like those are all, other than Built to Spill, those are all bands that like were fairly commercially successful.
Yeah,
but so, then Built to Spill was more like an indie band.
Exactly. So I'm getting deeper into it. So like all those bands that I mentioned, those were all bands that like my parents would play on the radio, and there would be like one out of every 10 songs that I liked. And so I sort of like built a playlist of all of those 1 out of 10 songs that I liked. And now I'm sort of starting to get suggested things by Spotify that are sort of like going down the rabbit hole a little bit further. Because it's like I've always listened to American football, but
right.
I didn't know there was a whole genre at the time. I thought they were just 10 years ahead of everyone else.
Yeah, no, they were.
But they were just like, leading the charge.
Well, there's like a lot of that like late 90s, early 2000s emo that's like a lot of jangly guitar stuff. That's like, it's funny because like when people think of emo, emo's the worst, like got the worst rap of any music, I think. Like the name became a joke so quick.
Yep.
And people always think of like My Chemical Romance or like weird bands like that, where I'm like, that's not emo at all. That's like pop punk that's like slightly influenced by some emo stuff.
I mean, really, I mean, it's radio rock.
Right.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of like there's a lot of like really good emo bands from that. I love that kind of music because like that was for me like high school and college.
Yeah.
Was that time, which is like usually when you find the bands that you're most passionate about or whatever, like at that kind of like 20 year old age. And so, yeah, there's like a ton of music from that era that I really love.
But it's cool because the bands I was listening to were the bands that were super heavily influenced by the bands you were listening to. So I was listening to a bunch of like The World is a Beautiful Place, a lot of like Balance and Composure, bands like that. But I didn't really realize where the influence was coming from. And so it's really cool seeing all of those elements from the bands that I really like, that I really like still, and what I primarily listen to, seeing all the very, very clear influences on what I grew up listening to from those bands.
Right. And it's always actually fun to do that, like with any time period, of just do like a little dive into like, sometimes I'll ask myself the question of like, what music would I have liked if I were born 10 years earlier or 20 years earlier or whatever?
And so that's what I'm sort of doing. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to do. Yeah.
You're doing the, if you were born when I was born, what would have been the bands that you would have liked in high school or whatever?
Kind of. Yeah. And it's fun. It's cool.
Yeah. It's a good way to like discover new stuff because like, yeah, you're always just like familiar with whatever the radio thing was. So like you think like, oh man, 80s music sucked, but you're thinking of like the five most popular 80s songs.
Yeah.
And that's it. When like there's this whole, there's so many different things out there that like you just were never exposed to.
All right. So you hit me with like one or two from like the 10 years prior to you. Like who are some people that maybe you didn't listen to at the time, but hearing them now, you sort of like, oh, okay, this is pretty good.
The number one band for me that like, yeah, if I had been born 10 years earlier that I think I really would have been into is the Smiths. So the Smiths and Morrissey, which like, I don't know if you've ever deep dived on them, but like,
no, I haven't.
They're really good. Like the songs are super catchy. Like I love their bass player. He's just like that. He comes from that style of bass where like the, like they're really just like all over the place, like really walking up and down the fretboard.
Yeah.
Like I said, really good melodies. Like the singing can be like, you know, you got to get used to it. The first time you hear it, you're going to, it's an odd style of singing, but like they have like some like kind of like punky sounding stuff. All of it's got really good sensibilities. Trying to, what would be some, like I've listened to like The Cure and like gone through a deep dive on them. I like them, but not as much.
They're not my thing. Yeah, I agree.
And then like, you know, I'll go back and listen to like bands like REM and stuff like that, that like, yeah, I was familiar with like their most popular songs or whatever. But then like, there's a lot of songs that were never singles that are really good. But
and that's the thing, the deep tracks, they're usually, they, every album has like three songs that no one ever listens to. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you ever ask anybody who's like a fan of that band, like, oh, what's your favorite, you know, U2 song or whatever, like they're probably not going to be like Sunday Bloody Sunday or whatever.
In the name of love.
It's going to be some song that you've never heard of.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm digging it. And it was really funny because whenever that album from Built to Spill like got served to me, like first listen, I was like, three tracks deep into it. And I texted you. I was like, do you know who this is? Because I looked at the dates. So I was like, if, because I know your taste and I know we have a pretty similar taste with music. And I was like, what is this? And you're like, it's good. I was like, it's amazing.
Oh, you know what else is funny? So remember last year when you were here in March and you showed me Pine Grove.
Yeah.
We watched like the audio tree thing. And then I got pretty into them and like listened to all their albums. And I'll still listen to them once in a while. And like, they very much for me are a band that has like elements that harken back to like that, like late 90s. Like a lot of their like guitar styling has that sort of like jangly emo sound to it.
Totally.
But then like it's weird. Like the, and again, they're like catchy, but then like the singer has a sort of, he has like a sort of country vibe.
He's
to
got
him.
Like a Nashville twang.
But then he also has this kind of like Kurt Cobain kind of like the way his like voice cracks.
Yeah.
Like goes between like yelling and soft and stuff.
And they've got an incredibly like dynamic and just like super tasteful drummer as well.
Yeah.
He's really great. He's awesome. So yeah. So there's some music picks, guys. Feed us some. Feed me some. If you were in the era and you think, if you got something you think I would dig, I would genuinely appreciate some suggestions. You ready to close this one out? This has been a long episode. It's been a fun one though.
Close it out.
All right. Well, thanks a ton for watching, guys. Thanks for making us part of your weekly routine, whether that's in your workshop or on your way to work or at your desk at work.
What, anything that has work in the title.
That's right.
If you're working out.
If you're working out. Or if you're just working on yourself, you know, trying to be
working
a better person.
Working on that tan.
Yeah. But anyways, have an amazing Thanksgiving, guys. Have fun with your friends, family. Appreciate the great things in life. And we'll see you next time on the Modern Maker Podcast. Bye, everybody.
Later.